You've just tuned into Beyond Your Past, part of the Mental Health News Radio Network. Welcome back to Beyond Your Past, the podcast that focuses on inspiring you to move forward from what's been holding you back in life. Each week, we talk with clinicians, coaches, mental health advocates, and those who've overcome tremendous odds and now use their journey to encourage you throughout yours. I'm Matt Pappas, certified coach and NLP master practitioner, alongside Joanne Suppressi, author, certified coach, and hypnotherapist. In addition to talking with amazing guests on the show, we share practical tips and insightful strategies that empower and encourage you to break free from anxiety, self-doubt, and the negative mindsets that keep you stuck. This is your place to feel validated and encouraged as you take your life back and live free from your past. Greetings, friend, and welcome back to the podcast. Before we get started, we want to take a second and thank a couple of incredible organizations. INLP Center, offering world-class online neuro-linguistic programming and life coach training to people in over 70 countries. If you've ever considered becoming a coach or simply want more information on their programs, just head over to inlpcenter.org. And to Daily Recovery Support, interactive daily group calls in a safe atmosphere for survivors of complex trauma, equipping you with the skills and information you can use every single day in your healing journey. Learn more about this affordable resource and get signed up at cptsdfoundation.org. And when you sign up for the Daily Recovery Support calls, use the promo code BEYONDYOURPAST, that's all one word, BEYONDYOURPAST, when you check out, and you'll receive 50% off your first month's membership. And we also want to say a special thank you to you. We appreciate you listening to the podcast and making us part of your weekly playlist. You all are the reason we do this show, and we wouldn't be here without you. If you enjoy these podcasts, please consider sharing this episode with one person who may find it helpful and leaving us a review on your favorite podcast app. That would be awesome. Finally, if you'd like to help support this podcast for as little as 99 cents per month, just head over to beyondyourpastradio.com and click on the support link at the top of the page. Your generous support of any amount helps us to continue bringing you new episodes every single week. So today's guest on the podcast is Kim Saeed. Kim is a good friend of Beyond Your Past and returns for her second appearance on the show to talk more about narcissistic abuse recovery, and in particular, how a narcissist will use the rule of seven to manipulate and execute their agenda in a toxic relationship. Kim is an expert in narcissistic abuse recovery and works with clients to help them break free from abusive and toxic relationships. She's also a speaker and award-winning author and the creator of the Essential Break Free Bootcamp Program for Narcissistic Abuse Recovery. During our chat, Kim talks about the tactics of a narcissist and how cognitive dissonance and gaslighting are a huge part of their role in getting you to conform to their twisted reality. She shares how you can recognize when you are in a relationship with a narcissist and how you can begin to free yourself from their grip. We talk about what it's like when a narcissist enters therapy with their partner and how they can even use a perceived safety of a therapy environment to manipulate their partner and still continue on their agenda, all while continuing to fool you and in some cases even manipulate and fool a therapist as well. All this and more during this podcast episode with the amazing Kim Saeed, starting right now. So hey, Kim, welcome back to Beyond Your Past. It's Matt. How are you?
I'm great, Matt. Thank you so much for having me on your show again.
It is a pleasure. The last time we chatted, was it 2018, I believe it was, when we chatted last time?
Quite a while. I'd say at least 8 or 9 months.
Yeah, it has. Yeah. And the podcast that we did together continues to get a lot of traction, a lot of listens, a lot of views. So I will definitely share that here as we did a bit more of an intro and talking about narcissistic abuse recovery and toxic people and all those kinds of things. So today we're going to continue on that theme. We're going to talk about the rule of seven as it relates to narcissistic abuse recovery and what that means and all that kind of good stuff. But before we get into that, if you want to give a little recap and say hello to everybody, that would be awesome.
Sure thing. Okay. So for those of you who don't know me, my name is Kim Saeed of KimSaeed.com, and I write all about narcissistic abuse and recovery. You can find me on my website, Kim Saeed. I also have a YouTube channel, and I'm basically just doing what I was put here to do. I did leave my teaching career to branch off into this purpose. So I'm really glad that you are giving me the opportunity to talk to your followers today.
Oh, absolutely. I have a ton of respect for the work you're doing. All your videos are amazing. Your blog posts are, they're very easy to digest and read, which I think is important, because a lot of times when we get into very specific, very difficult topics such as this, sometimes you read blog posts where it's just full of big words and stuff you don't understand, and people ramble on and you're like, oh my God. But when you read yours, they are concise. They are to the point. They are easy to read, and they explain everything in such a way that's relatable to anybody who deals with this, either in their own life now or in the past, or maybe they know somebody that deals with a narcissistic abusive person, or, you know, a toxic person in their life.
Thank you for mentioning that. Yeah, I do tons of research. I don't only go off of my own personal experience, but also case studies of my, you know, many clients, but I do also perform tons of research, and you're absolutely right. You get out there on these academic sites, like I use Google Scholar a lot. And yeah, so I try to break this stuff down in a way that people can understand, because they're already feeling traumatized and confused. And the last thing they need to do is whip out their dictionaries and try to figure out what I'm trying to say in my blog articles. So thank you for mentioning that.
Absolutely. So let's kind of jump in. And one of the blog posts that I will link in the show notes is something that you wrote, and the title is Narcissistic Abuse Recovery and the Rule of Seven. Now, many of us have heard of the Rule of Seven in terms of the marketing world and the business world, but you relate it also to the role of recovery and healing from a narcissistic person. So if you want to dive into that and share some, then we'll get started.
Okay, sure thing, Matt. Well, I chose the topic, the Rule of Seven, because as you mentioned, a lot of us have heard of the Rule of Seven, especially if someone's in a business arena in their jobs, or if they're CEOs or anyone in marketing. And it's basically the concept of the theory that if someone sees or hears about something seven times, they're more likely to interact with your product or your brand or whatever the case may be. But I wanted to kind of put a twist on that, because I really want people to understand how narcissists use gaslighting in this way to form this sort of cognitive dissonance, so that they have their targets believing things and going along with things that are just really not accurate and in many cases ludicrous. So that's why I titled it The Rule of Seven, because we're really working with how repetition over time can cause someone to believe something even if it's not true. And so this is a form of gaslighting. And one of the biggest examples I can think of right off the cuff is I work with a lot of female clients, and a lot of them are dealing with infidelity, different types of infidelity, whether it's, you know, visiting porn sites, or they see these texts coming in on their partner's phones, or maybe they've come across emails, and somehow their narcissistic partner is able to convince them over time that it's not really so bad after all. Everyone's doing it. So-and-so's doing it, and their girlfriend or wife is still with them. So it's really a way that a narcissistic person can get you to hop on board. Maybe you don't really agree with it or like it, but you're willing to tolerate it because they have somehow convinced you that you're overreacting and that what they're doing is actually okay.
So many things right there that you mentioned right off the bat. And, you know, when you were talking about making something seem tolerable over, and, you know, as we know, regardless of the situation, when you tolerate something for so long, eventually you start to believe it, you start to embrace it, it starts to become kind of part of you, it starts to become something that you believe in, and then that's where the narcissistic person can really kind of take hold, really perhaps keep their grip on you even more, because if they can convince you that something, I mean, maybe, you know, as you mentioned, maybe it's not something you necessarily buy into right away, but if you start to tolerate a little bit, then you start to get used to it, then it becomes part of you, and then they pretty much got you, right?
Right. And this is why I hear from people who have finally broken free from these kinds of relationships, and they're looking back and they're thinking, oh my God, I can't believe I tolerated that. But when they're in the relationship, because they are under the narcissist's pathological influence and the gaslighting, they're able to confuse the people that they're in relationships with and then other people even in their inner circles. And so the narcissist uses this as a form of gaslighting to confuse their partner or whomever were, you know, whoever they're trying to confuse by insisting that that person is mistaken. So again, I'll use the infidelity example. If you see that your partner has texts coming in, and this can also be females, by the way, I'm just using this example because it's the most common one that I have in my practice, but, you know, women are absolutely capable of doing this as well. I had one male client who had his girlfriend over and they were talking and she was rifling through her purse and these condoms popped out and he knew they weren't using them. So she was able to convince him somehow in that particular moment that he was overreacting. So this is how they are able to, over time, convince the people they're in relationships with that what they're doing isn't so bad after all, when really it causes these people that they're in the relationship with to lose their grip on reality. And that's why the cognitive dissonance is so strong towards the end of these relationships, because a person's cognitive mind is telling them or screaming at them, this is wrong. You should not be tolerating this. But then their subconscious mind, because they've heard this over and over and over, becomes part of a sort of a hidden belief system that, well, maybe I'm overreacting. Maybe this really is more common than I'm realizing here. Maybe this, you know, maybe this is the modern form of relationships, and maybe I should just stop being so sensitive about this. But it's only after they're out of that relationship that they realize that they were really being suckered. You know, and I write about this in my blog article. It's like that Shaggy song from back in the year 2000, It Wasn't Me. So his girlfriend walked in on him cheating on her, and he keeps telling her it wasn't me. You know, and I guess it's kind of a funny song, but this is actually a very sad reality for people who are in these abusive and narcissistic relationships. When someone keeps telling you that up is down or that left is right, after a while, it's really easy for you to feel like you're going crazy.
And, you know, even on top of that, and maybe you can comment on this too, once you start to believe and, you know, you kind of sit with that cognitive dissonance and you start to believe everything that the toxic person is telling you, it kind of really distorts your view of not just that part of your life, but in reality as a whole, right? Like the whole world, perhaps, you know, business relationships or other friendships or, you know, or parenting or whatever it is, that you almost become susceptible to tolerating more. Well, not almost, I guess you would be susceptible to tolerating more in a relationship that you know and that you feel is not right. But because you've been brainwashed, you've been, you know, kind of berated verbally over and over again by this toxic person telling you, hey, it wasn't me, or it's really not that bad, or everybody's doing it. And eventually it distorts your view of reality to the point where it affects other parts of your life.
Well, you're absolutely right. And this is why I write about this a lot. And what I talk about is that this is one reason why it's so important that people who have come out of these types of relationships to not date again for at least 6 to 12 months. And I'd say in some cases longer, because when you have been in a relationship with a person like that, you're actually primed in such a way that if you do enter into a new relationship, you're more likely to go along with similar behaviors. And yes, you are right in that. If you have in the past thought that someone, like you said, a colleague's behavior is maybe not on point, or you feel this really weird vibration coming from a coworker, if you're in a relationship with a narcissist, those other people's dysfunctional behaviors might start to seem somewhat normal. And really what's happening is you're getting desensitized to those folks' negative behaviors and actions. You know, and so convincing someone to ignore the truth isn't easy. And so that's why narcissists use this, you know, rule of seven to their advantage. You know, they use repetition in this way to convince people to share their point of view on an issue. And they know intuitively that as long as they're consistent with their answers, that their target will begin to believe it too, even if this information is completely false and unwarranted. So it's really quite scary. And that's why, you know, I do use the term brainwashing a lot, because that's exactly what is going on.
Yeah. When I first started learning about narcissistic abuse and toxic people, and I mean, obviously I had heard the term brainwashing before, but I never equated it to anything other than like old sci-fi movies or, you know, something else. But when you start to see that it really is like this grooming, this brainwashing that changes you, it changes your personality, it changes the way you view yourself, the view your world, your, you know, all different types of relationships. It's as fascinating as it is scary, as it is frustrating, as it is evil, really. It's so enlightening because when, you know, if you've never heard of these terms before, right, you know, perhaps you have just never heard of gaslighting or cognitive dissonance or brainwashing or narcissistic abuse or whatever, you often, you know, when you start to finally learn about it, everything clicks and you're like, oh my God, this person does that. Oh my God, I used to do that. Oh, you know, this person makes me feel that way. And that is quite a startling revelation when you realize that, you know, for so long, maybe this is all you knew. And now once you start to research or you work with a therapist or somebody gives you a book to read or a video to watch, you're like, wow, this is me. And that can be pretty
overwhelming.
Insert your own ad. Yeah. Overwhelming, scary, frustrating, angering, whatever. Right.
Yeah. And you know, it's really ironic because this is such an epidemic right now. And at the same time, I work with people who are highly intelligent, educated, accomplished people. You know, a lot of my clients are therapists themselves. And so that is kind of speaks to the fact that it doesn't really matter how much you know about narcissism. It doesn't make you immune. But going back to what you just said, you know, I talk with people and they'll say, well, I've been with this person for 20 years and I had no idea what narcissism even was until I stumbled across something on Google, or like you said, someone gave me a book. And so that just tells me that we really are lacking in awareness, even though this is such a huge epidemic right now. And it is scary because it used to be that, according to the older studies, that I think 6% of the population had narcissistic tendencies or full-blown narcissistic personality disorder. But from what I'm seeing now, I think it's much, much higher. We're just now starting to see it. People are becoming more aware, but we just don't have enough education out there. And like you said, these terms that we're using, the gaslighting, the brainwashing, all this seems very, I don't know, out there for someone just learning. You know, when we think about brainwashing, we think about, you know, being on the couch and someone's, you know, you're looking into this swinging pendulum and all of a sudden you're clucking like a chicken, but it's not really like that. Brainwashing is something that's actually used by cult leaders. And I've written about that, how narcissists are, they actually use the same psychological manipulation techniques as cult leaders. I even talk about that in my webinar. And so the brainwashing is just when you use repetition, even if the information is not true or accurate, when you're in a relationship with someone that you have formed maybe a bond with, or you have started to like them or love them, and they're telling you something over and over again, you first start to doubt yourself because the narcissist is never going to admit they're wrong. So if they just use this influential tactic, such as this repetition, then they're more successful in getting the person to be on board with the idea, even if the person doesn't like it, even if it's emotionally traumatizing to them, they will start to tolerate it because they think they're overreacting.
It's so true. And because I want to get into also yet on our chat about how we can start to recover from this, how we can pull ourselves out, how we can start to reverse the brainwashing and all that. But it might be beneficial for those who are listening who maybe have not heard of all these terms. You know, you mentioned brainwashing a little bit, but we've also talked about cognitive dissonance. We've talked about gaslighting, and there's many, many other terms, but we're kind of focusing on these three right now. So if you want to share a little bit about exactly what is cognitive dissonance and what is gaslighting for those who don't know, it might help to put some of this into a perspective.
So gaslighting is a little bit along the same line as this rule of seven. Gaslighting is where you make someone doubt their perception of reality. And some of the more common examples I can use, well, there's the movie Gaslight. And apparently it's this man who really confuses his wife by moving car keys and moving things around the house and telling her that he didn't touch them. So she starts to lose her grip on reality. Another common one is when a target of narcissistic abuse tries to talk to the narcissist about something like this. The narcissist maybe went into a rage one day and said to this person, you know, you're horrible, you're awful, no one's ever going to love you. Once I'm out of your life, you're going to be single forever. And that is actually a form of gaslighting, because most people in these relationships look back and their lives were, you know, seemingly normal. They had friends and they had, you know, relationships, but all of a sudden they start to actually believe that once the narcissist is gone, that they'll never have a relationship again. And that's one reason a lot of people stay in these relationships, but they might go back and, you know, try to talk to the narcissist and, hey, what you did really hurt me. I can't believe you did that. And the narcissist will say, I don't know what you're talking about because that never happened. So that's one example of gaslighting. Cognitive dissonance is what happens when you have been gaslighted over a period of time. So cognitive dissonance is why people are so confused. So on one hand, they think the narcissist is charming and fun to be around and even loves them. But on the other hand, they know that the narcissist can be evil and they're a liar and they're a cheater. And so they can't reconcile those two versions of that person in their psyche. They just can't reconcile. And so what will happen is they'll have to get rid of one of the beliefs. And what normally happens is they'll get rid of the belief that the narcissist is evil and a liar and a cheater, and they'll start to justify these actions. And they'll say things to themselves such as, well, you know, maybe I am overreacting. Maybe I've gained too much weight, or maybe, you know, I'm not taking care of myself like I used to. And they'll start to make excuses for the things that the narcissist is doing because of the cognitive dissonance. So those are the top examples I can think of right off.
Yeah. And they are perfect examples and something I'm sure many can relate to. I mean, I know I can relate to them. And, you know, it's interesting when you're talking about this, you know, cognitive dissonance and holding two different beliefs about the same person or the event or circumstance. And you're right, you know, oftentimes the thing that you end up giving up is what is actually really true in reality versus, you know, what the narcissistic person, what the toxic person is telling you, because you're around that person, because they have so much influence on you, it feels like, well, they must be right, and I guess I'm wrong. And then you start to shame or doubt yourself, you know, as we've been talking about. But then you get this element of shame in there of like, well, you know, I must be broken. I must not be seeing things right. They're telting me this didn't happen. What in the world's wrong with me? And so that can help, you know, that can really lead to this shame spiral of how broken am I that I can't see the reality that this person who loves me and cares for me and has my best interests at heart, so I think, is telling me all these things, but they're different than what my heart is telling me or what my family's telling me or my friends or what this book says. And that's just, it's really just this total mind screw, right?
It absolutely is. And this is why it makes it so hard for people to actually break free from these relationships, because at the end, you know, when it comes down to the crossroads and they're faced with either I stay in this relationship or I leave this relationship, they use all of those same thought processes. Well, maybe it's not so bad after all. You know, maybe we can finally work this out. And the narcissist will say things to make you believe that they're going to try to work on the relationship. But as we have all discovered, it's all just smoke and mirrors, because they say one thing and always end up doing another. And even if they do what they said, like go to therapy, it's not because they want to improve their behaviors or be a better partner or a better friend or whatever. Narcissists don't go to therapy with change in mind. They go to therapy with agendas in mind. But for the person who's the target of narcissistic abuse, in their mind, it's like, oh my God, thank goodness. They're finally going to do something. This relationship can be salvaged after all. And so then what happens is they'll use that, the narcissist will use that therapy crutch for years and years. I've worked with people who have been in therapy with the narcissist 10, 20, 30 years. And I, you know, first of all, if you're in therapy that long with the same therapist and you're not seeing improvement, you probably want to, you know, after a couple of years, I'd say it, even less than that, it's time for you to start thinking about a different route. You should never be in therapy that long and not see improvement.
You are so right. And I was kind of laughing to myself too. And I'm thinking, and you're in therapy for, you know, 10, 20, 30 years with a narcissist, and like, things aren't getting any better. And so I don't know how much you can share about this, but is that common, you know, with people that you work with or people that you've talked to be in therapy that long with a toxic person? And how does the helping professional, the therapist or whoever, put up with something that long when there's no strides being made? I mean, this right here is like a total cognitive dissonance moment for me. Like, I'm sitting here thinking, how can you be in therapy for 30 years with a toxic person and with a therapist, and you're making no headway and think that it's, I'm going to say, quote unquote, normal?
Well, unfortunately, let me preface this by saying that there are some very good therapists who are very aware of narcissistic abuse and how to help people who are the targets of this kind of abuse, but they're very, very hard to find. And usually the ones who are very good at what they do are people who have been through narcissistic abuse themselves, and they have, like, very much like I have, decided to go into, you know, being a therapist, that they can help other people to come out of it too. And I do have some really dear colleagues who are these types of therapists who know about narcissistic abuse and can actually help people. But from my understanding, working with therapists, this kind of thing is not in their curriculum when they're going through school to be licensed. And so because they really, I mean, they know what's in the DSM. They've learned a little bit about narcissistic personality disorder, but because they've had such little experience working with actual narcissists, they have no clue how to help people who are the target of narcissistic abuse. And so they're giving out very unfortunate advice, and they're taking on that it takes two approach. And I've even thought about coming out with an article about stupid SHIT that therapists say, because some of them are actually saying things like, well, she can't be a narcissist because she's a woman, or, well,
wow, maybe, really?
Yeah.
Or, okay. Maybe, you definitely have to write this book or this blog post or whatever.
Or things like, well, that's because you're bringing out their abusive tendencies. They're only like that with you. And this is probably one of the most unfortunate things I've heard from people. Is, and they, these are therapists hopping onto my social media, onto my blog comments, and other people who do the same thing as I do, and saying these things. Well, they're just like that. Maybe they're just like that with you because there's something about your personality that brings that abusive nature out in them. I just want to say that normal people don't have abusive tendencies, first of all. I say that knowing that everyone has some level of childhood wounding, and they might shut down, and they might say things that hurt someone's feelings, but it's not something that happens on a regular basis. They'll come back and say, look, I'm really sorry. That was totally out of line. And then you might not have another situation or event like that for many, many months. With the narcissist, you are like out there getting hit with trauma after trauma and betrayal after betrayal, and you can't even get up off the ground because you're just being bombarded with this stuff over and over again. So that should be a very big indicator to any therapist or counselor that there's something wrong there. But, you know, to be honest, narcissists can be so convincing that they can fool therapists. And so if you are in a toxic relationship and the other person is doing stuff to you and you've been in therapy for years and nothing's getting better, that's probably because you're with a narcissist and no amount of therapy is going to help.
Such just incredible insight. And I'm kind of sitting here just shaking my head going, oh my God. And yeah, so definitely please write that post or that book or whatever, because that would just be, like I said, it would be as enlightening as it would be probably comical as it would be just, oh my God, like I can't even believe that a therapist would tell something like, you know, would say something like this to a client. But I know before we go, though, we've been talking a lot about gaslighting and cognitive dissonance and brainwashing and, you know, really learning or really getting to a point where you tolerate more than you ever thought you would. So how can we recognize, I guess, that we are in this relationship, or how can we start to pull ourselves out of it, or what can we do? Because, you know, if we've got this toxic person in our life who, as you said, is just bombarding us day after day after day, trauma after trauma after trauma, telling us all these things that we now believe to be normal and routine, and everybody must be like this, and if I think otherwise, then I'm the broken one. How do we begin to pull ourselves out of it? How do we start the healing process? How do we figure this out?
Those are good questions. So narcissists do rely on self-doubt as a stepping stone to basically change the belief system of their targets. And so with this in mind, the biggest thing I can offer right now is that one thing we need to do to start breaking this trauma bond, because that's what it is, basically. We're trauma bonded to the narcissist. Unfortunately, they don't experience the trauma bond. Only we do. So one way to start breaking that, one way to start dissolving the cognitive dissonance and overcome the brainwashing and the gaslighting is this. Don't pay attention to a person's words, especially someone that you're in a relationship with who always says one thing but does another. So you want to start paying attention to patterns, because patterns never lie. So, and this is one thing I tell my coaching clients, you know, they're still confused. Well, yeah, they're doing this, but I still feel like maybe it's not the right decision to leave. And here's what I have to say. Look, you've been in this relationship with this person for 10, 15, 20 years. If they were really and truly going to change, they would have done it by now. So if a person tells you, well, I'm going to go to therapy, and they might be, maybe they go once or twice and then they drop out. Well, yeah, well, they tried, a lot of the targets will say, but you have to put an expiration date on these kinds of behaviors. You can't keep giving someone the benefit of the doubt over and over when in reality, they haven't given you any reason to give them the benefit of the doubt. So don't keep expecting positive change when they haven't really done anything to make you expect positive change. Another thing that you can start doing is write things down, because when you are in a traumatized state, your intelligent mind or your cognitive mind often will shut down because you are in a state of fight or flight or panic mode, whatever you want to call it. And you really can't think intelligently during those times because your brain is actually shutting down for that fight or flight response to get those, you know, different things going in your body to prepare you for flight. So that means your brain is shutting down to help you escape. And so it's during these moments that you should get out a book or a journal and write this stuff down because you might forget. It might not even be that the narcissist is gaslighting you. Oftentimes we actually forget these things or we block them out of our memory. So write the things down. It might even be good to tell a friend or a family member, like say, you know, this unfortunately didn't used to be the case, but it's becoming more common for narcissists to become physically violent. If that happens, absolutely call the police. Now, I know that's hard because you don't want to get that person in trouble, but let's face it, they just attacked you. They're not worried about your safety. They're not worried about your emotional comfort because they attacked you. So at the very least, call and file a police report because later on down the road, when this relationship starts to crumble down like a stucco house in an earthquake, you have to be able to have a leg to stand on. So if you go to court and you're trying to convince people this person's abusive and you never filed any police reports, your credibility just goes down the drain at that point. Sometimes you can also record conversations. Now, a lot of times it's just going to be for your own personal reference. But depending on the state where you live, you might be able to, like, say, eventually you do have to go to court. Or if you just want to use it for personal reference, that's fine. But you might also want to start recording things like if you're driving in the car with them, because if you're in your car, a lot of times that would be admissible. Narcissists do, you know, perpetrators of physical and emotional abuse often do rely on isolation or isolating their victims so that that person doesn't have any outside influence, which is further making them confused, furthering the cognitive dissonance. But if you have any friends or family members who you still communicate with, definitely let them know what's happening. Give them dates, give them events, take pictures if you have been hit and there's a bruise or a mark of any kind. Now, there are some professionals who say, well, these are some dialogues and these are some things you can say to narcissists to, you know, sort of make the situation less toxic, or maybe to get them to come around. You know, they'll tell you, well, you can make it clear that you're going to walk away from a bad relationship, but none of that works with narcissists. They have gotten used to overstepping boundaries. And so it does no good really to tell that person that you're going to do ABC if they don't stop their behaviors. In fact, I would not even tell them things like that, because it only gives them more ammunition to manipulate you. So if you tell them, if you keep this up, I'm going to leave you, then they are going to start acting a certain way to make you think that they're trying to change. When the truth of the matter is, whatever that is they're doing, they're cheating, they're lying, they're embezzling money, they're doing whatever, they're still doing all those things. They're just hiding it better. So you really don't want to give them that much ammunition. You just want to keep these things to yourself. Document. And those things will hopefully help you get a better grip on reality and help you see that the things that you think are going on are going on. But again, the most important thing is pay attention to patterns, not words.
Incredible information. I love that advice of paying attention to patterns, because when you start to pay attention to them, you know, you start writing them down, you start to see every time I say this, they do that. Every time they say this and that they're going to do that, they do something else. And so that can be something to really kind of put things into perspective for you and really kind of make you see that, hey, maybe I'm not crazy. Maybe I'm not the broken one. Maybe I'm not the one who has a distorted view of reality here of what life and our relationships can be. Because, you know, everything that they're doing is not what people who aren't toxic do. And now that I see it and I see these patterns developing, maybe that's going to give me the confidence to reach out for help, to maybe believe what my, you know, friends are telling me, my family's telling me, what, you know, the safe people are telling me, what my mind is telling me is actually safe or not. So I love it, Kim. That was incredible insight. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Where can we find you online with your courses, with your coaching, with your videos, all that good stuff?
Thank you, Matt. Well, again, it's KimSaeed.com is my website. And again, I do have a YouTube channel, Kim Saeed. My courses can also be found on my website. It's the New Life Academy. And also I have a couple of eBooks on Amazon. And the most popular one is How to Do No Contact Like a Boss. And so that walks people through the no contact process. And it's kind of what I based my course on, the Essential Breakthrough Bootcamp. But with the course, you actually get the support and the tools that help you develop these new healing and empowering habits.
Definitely worth checking out your videos, the blog, the courses, the bootcamp, the eBooks, everything. Kim, your content is incredible. It helps so many people. I know I've learned a ton over the years from reading all the stuff that you put out there. And it's always a pleasure to talk to you here on the podcast.
Thank you, Matt. It's my pleasure. And I would love to be on your show again anytime you want to invite me back on.
Thanks for listening to Beyond Your Past, part of the Mental Health News Radio Network. Information shared on this podcast is for educational and informational purposes only. Nothing on this podcast should supersede the direction of a medical doctor or any mental health professional. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe on your favorite podcasting app and leave us a review. We would sure appreciate it. Also, please consider sharing this episode with someone who may find it helpful. If you would like more information on working with Matt as your coach, just head over to beyondyourpast.com and schedule your free one-hour chat. If you'd like to learn more about working with Joanne as your coach, please check out joannesuppressi.com and contact her for more information. We're always on the lookout for new guests. If you're interested in joining us on an upcoming episode, just head over to beyondyourpastradio.com and contact us. We'd love to hear from you. Talk to you soon.